Okay, welcome to the second edition now. It's been like what, fucking 2 weeks since the last time we fucking recorded?
About a week and a half.
Not, well, you know, same thing. Basically, I have heard good, mostly good reviews from our other podcast, all four people. But hey, when you
We'll
start
take
these
it.
things, yeah, fuck yeah, four people. Maybe we'll get eight on this one.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, well, I'll
I'm
make
shooting
sure.
for seven.
Yeah, that's probably more likely. Last time, but first off, I want to apologize with the shit fucking quality that we had. I've been experimenting with the recording process, and I had it on record for joint stereo instead of stereo. That's why when one of us would speak, you would only hear it from one ear instead of both. Hopefully that's fixed now. I've got it on stereo, so it should be fixed. Not to mention that Jamie Furyk's fucking internet is awful, and also not to mention the fucking guy has it on open mic,
Oh,
and
God.
everyone in Scotland decided to show up at his fucking house when he was recording. Fuck, he's like, and it's great because you didn't hear it because he typed to us. He's like, "Mom's here. She won't fuck off." Mom's just sitting there. You probably hear her in the background. What little you can hear from the last one, her just being like, "Oh yeah, whatever, however the fuck Scott sound."
Don't think that's it.
Well, similar. Today we are talking about the ever famous year in professional wrestling, 1994, and sure, a lot of you are probably wondering what the fuck? It's the most random year ever, but actually, 94 was a very pivotal year. excuse me, I'm a failure. No, for one, in 94, the first time ever in WWF history that there were two Royal Rumble winners. I remember that being amazing to me when I was a kid. I was like, holy fuck, what? How did it? No!
Yeah, I was very confused and very puzzled about how that happened. I'm like, wait, so did they just redo that or what happened here? Of course, I was very young and I didn't know.
Right, same here. I was like, okay, like this is awesome. And of course, I'll tell you, it was a really rare moment in WWF. I wouldn't say rare. That makes it sound like I think that everything WWF did was shit, which is not true, clearly. They did a really smart thing for WrestleMania that year. They did like a mini tournament. The first And Yokozuna was a WWF champion, and we will go into definite detail about him and his run because I personally think Yoko was one of the most underrated fucking big men of all time. The dude gets a lot of negative reviews and criticisms because he was so large, but what people fail to realize is this dude was fucking athletic for a 500-pound guy.
Oh, he was ridiculous. Hell of a
Oh.
worker.
And him and Brett had some odd chemistry. Like, I really, whoever's listening to this, please go and find matches of Brett and Yoko from 93, 94 time. Unbelievable shit. They really did David versus Goliath. I wouldn't say perfectly, but near perfectly.
About as good as you're going to get for the two.
Yeah. They actually did a cage match that was on Superstars or something, and it is online somewhere. I remember watching, and it is fucking great. I mean, the psychology is there, and I think that's probably why the matches are so good, is because the psychology is a must when you have one guy that's so obviously, much bigger than the other guy. You have to kind of, do some different things than, for instance, Bret Hart's not going to do his signature backbreaker on Yoko. And he
Not gonna
shouldn't
happen.
even attempt because everyone's going to look at it and be like, what the fuck? Why do you think that that's possible? So it was a different match. It's not, of course, it's not a Catch-as-Catch-Can classic. It's not Bret versus Shawn or anything. It's what it is, but it's great for what it is, in my view. But anyway, Mania, they did a deal where Luger got the first shot, and they did another thing. And here's the thing that today most wrestling companies do not do, and it's they layered everything. It wasn't just, two guys get a shot at the title in one night. They also had the guest refs that you
Sure.
didn't know who they were until they came out. The first guest ref was Mr. Perfect, who had been out of from injury from his back from like 91. He'd been out for a good while. And so Luger gets the first shot. Luger gets fucked by Mr. Perfect, and that leads right into you know, a little mini angle there that really never really surfaced because really Perfect was still not ready to compete. And then, of course, the final match was Brett and Yoko, and Brett ending the near year-long run Yoko had with the belt. But before that, 1993, and we'll do a whole separate one for 93, but I really want to talk about how at the end of 93, people are going to be shocked, but that really – people looked at 94 as – the last years of guys such as Randy Savage, Hulk Hogan, definitely. A lot of people thought Hogan was going to retire. He even himself was teasing that he was going to and left the WWF and was out of wrestling for
– He was done. He was going to go to movies.
Yep, he was done, and he was doing Thunder in Paradise, I believe.
Yep.
Yeah, 94 was when he started Thunder in Paradise, early 94. Flair – they did the really awesome angle in WCW where Flair challenged Vader in Starrcade. Still one of the most brutal fucking matches I've ever seen, by the way. And really a perfect example of why people think Flair's the greatest of all time. I personally don't. I definitely say he's top three. But that match makes you understand because, I mean, he took a guy, Vader, who – super Japanese influence. Vader was a monster.
Very stiff.
Oh, fuck yeah. I asked Flair's mouth at the end of that match. His mouth was fucked. And I think Flair even said he knocked a tooth out and shit. I mean, he fucked him up. And Flair's gone on record to say Vader did not want to lose that night. It was as close to a shoot as you can get. Like, Vader was pissed that he had to give the belt up. And he had an incredible fucking run with it, by the way. And a lot of people really need to understand how dominant Vader was in the early 90s. This fucking guy was unlike anyone really ever in the business. He was like Bam Bam times two. This dude could go with anybody. His matches with Sting, in my view, are still some of the best matches that I've seen. I mean, he just could work with anyone. I mean, I can't remember very many matches Vader had. Of course, there's a few. There was a couple of Cactus Jack matches where you kind of went, what the fuck? But again, Vader was super athletic. And here's another guy just like Yoko, 400-plus pounds. He was doing moonsaults. No one did this. And not like the bullshit Bam Bam moonsaults where
like
you go
legit
to the side. He was literally doing moonsaults. And just so graceful and good. And so for Flair...
I'm sorry, it's just ironic how we use graceful and stiff in the same connotation.
Yeah, well, because, you know, I think that especially with a guy like Vader, it's really kind of circumstantial. Mm-hmm. And he was smart, man. He understood that I have to make this shit look legit because everyone thinks that wrestling is fucking horseshit. They still do to this day. And I, in my opinion, there's not enough stiff guys in the business.
What was the incident where he like fucked up a reporter or something like that overseas? Where was that at?
That was when he was in WWF in
97. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's why he was gone for like a year, if you remember, and he came back to WWF in 98 to like do jobs.
Yeah.
Pretty much what he did, and then he got phased out. That was in Kuwait.
Oh, that's right, Kuwait. Yes, I was trying to think of where that was.
Yeah, well, and of course, Vader had some infamous run-ins in WCW, the Paul Orndorff story from 95,
yeah,
where Orndorff just fucked him up. That's a report, of course, so we don't know exactly. And Vader, if by chance, I know you're not listening to this, please don't murder me. And whatever. I mean, he's never going to hear this ever. Who the fuck are we? But anyway.
No, he's in Boulder.
Yeah,
just kill him.
He's a fucking mark. Anyway. No. So everyone, I mean, 94 was the year that was supposed to be really the end of that era of guys, of Flair, of Hogan. You know, these dudes were in their mid to late 40s. They were ready to go. It was Savage. Part. Yeah. And, you know, Savage is the most surprising to me because Savage still had a lot in his fucking tank. I mean, this dude And we would see later, even in like 96, 97, this dude was having fucking phenomenal matches.
Yeah. A lot of
But.
that had to do, though, with them regulating him to color, and then also the whole Slim Jim deal.
Right. Well, yeah. And here's the thing. And WWF was smart in this. It took a long time for them to finally cultivate where they were going in the early 90s. But basically, Vince said, Brett's my guy. And, you guys are older now, and thank you for your contribution, but no thank you. I don't really have a spot for you anymore. And, it's a now famous story of Hogan was supposed to go against Brett at WrestleMania 9, going back to 93 just real quick. Hogan said, fuck no, and that's why you have the double belt change on that Mania, who, I mean, a lot of people consider the worst WrestleMania of all time.
Oh, yeah.
That's debatable, but definitely not one of the better ones. I personally like it just because it's so wacky, but so you had that. You had these guys that were in their 40s going, wait, whoa, hold on here. We've still got something left. And, Flair, same situation when he was in WWF. He's the guy that jobbed Brett for the belt for the first time. So. And so he left, went to WCW, became another top guy, and so going into early 94, these guys were supposed to be done. And it's funny now because two of the three that I just mentioned, one unfortunately is passed, so he really doesn't have a choice, but Hogan's on fucking TV still.
Yep.
Probably going to fucking wrestle sometime in the summer. That's the plan from what I've heard.
Yeah.
Flair, I mean, that guy is just. I'm sorry, but I think
Talk about a
Flair
guy
just.
who's ruined his legacy.
I was about to say, I think he's tarnished his legacy just about as much as you possibly could.
I mean, when WWE gives him the kind of send-off he did, and he didn't just like take a couple years off or take even a year off, like it was literally like 2 months later, like he was in TNA. Like, oh hey, I'm back. I'm not retired. Are
Well,
you kidding me?
first he did like one appearance for Ring of Honor, one.
Yeah.
Basically just saying, I watch Ring of Honor because somehow they thought that that was going to get them more viewers. It didn't.
And the whole Hogan summer tour.
Right. And so it was about a year maybe until Flair ended up in TNA.
Right, but the point was is
Well,
that
yeah,
he
still.
didn't take any time off like at all. He was still making appearances, still keeping his name out there, and still, I mean, he wasn't even riding off the fact that he was in the Hall of Fame. It was a ride of, oh hey, I'm still around, I'm still famous, I'm still big,
Yeah.
you know.
Well, the story is the reason why he's done this is because he literally has like no fucking money. I mean,
Right.
this dude, honestly, Flair's story, in my view, is one of the tragedies of the business because here's a guy, this
Gotta be one of the
dude,
biggest.
oh, fuck, he was the biggest. In the early 80s, man, early to mid 80s, before Hogan, he was the biggest guy in the business. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he fucking. Tr he. And it's kind of unfair because, in WWF at that point they had Backlund, so it was like who you really. Backlund, incredible in-ring performer for that time, but we all know not the most charismatic guy in the world. And unfortunately, Vince Sr. was at the helm, so they couldn't do what Junior did later, making him crazy, which actually worked, and he got over. Actually got another WWF title run, which again, 94, we'll get to that. No, and the fact Flair should be an institution. Flair should be Hogan
Yeah.
right now. I mean, he was making money before Hogan was making money. And
Yeah.
the fact that he has, I mean, from my reports that I've heard, and again, this is all, hearsay, he literally pretty much doesn't have anything. Like, I'm pretty positive he had to, I mean, he's filed for bankruptcy, I know at least twice. It's just, wow. And all of it is because, and the dude doesn't have a bad drug addiction. It's not that. It's just, honestly, the way I look at it is he lives his gimmick. I mean, he
Yep.
lives it too hard. I think he's the kind of the petri dish experiment, if you will, of this is why you need to turn it off after the matches, because you can fuck yourself bad
Oh,
being
huge.
the guy. Michaels, same exact thing. Michaels lived his gimmick and he ended up having a drug addiction. So Scott Hall is the most amazingly horrible example. We'll talk about him definitely more later. But, you know, Hogan, though, to me, is also right up there with Flair in terms of tragedy. This dude just doesn't understand. And by this point, 2012, most of these people that even know who Hogan is are at the least late teens right now.
Sure.
They're the only ones that can actually even remember Hogan at all. And they're remembering him from his WCW run. They're not even remembering his WWF run.
Right.
We're honestly, you know, our generation's probably the last generation that remembers him as a WWF anything, aside from when he came back after
Or
the
at least had the
WCW
chance
title.
to see it. I mean, because,
Right?
I mean, people can do the research or whatever and find out the history of it. But, you know, like we can go back and watch it from the 70s and 80s, but, you know, we weren't there to see it. Well,
Which,
you know.
by the way, let me just lay that out there. That doesn't fucking mean that you know everything, by the way. I had an argument with this fucking retard online the other day about this exact, where he claimed that I have 12 years of wrestling knowledge. Well, blow me with your 12 years,
Yeah, I
all
mean,
right?
that
What
doesn't
is?
count to dick.
No, it doesn't. And I'm not saying I'm better than you. No one's better than anybody. But I do fucking remember when the business was different. Hence this podcast.
Yes.
This is exactly why we do this, because we remember when wrestling was wrestling and it wasn't horse shit and fucking, you know, the number one knock on wrestling, and I know I'm ranting a little bit, but I just want to say this. The number one knock on wrestling is that it's a male soap opera. But what people don't realize is there was a time when it was a very serious entertainment medium, where literally people were trying to kill these guys. Like, this was the era of heat, and I think that the early 90s was really the end of any sort of honest heat. And I would say the NWO marked the definitive end, because there was some white heat
Yeah.
in the NWO early on. I mean, you know, the famous, like, you know, in Daytona when it was revealed Hogan turned heel, the ring was filled with trash. That's heat like a motherfucker.
Oh yeah.
You know, you don't see that in WWF. It's not allowed, for one,
Right. Yeah, you'll
but it
get
was
kicked out.
a great aesthetic, you know? But anyway, I don't think people realize how big of a star Hogan was. This dude was professional wrestling. I mean, this dude, he was on Arsenio Hall. He was on everything. Everyone knew who he was. Like, you know, WWF was so massive, and even when it started getting smaller, it was still the standard. That late 80s, early 90s was when WWF became WWF. This is wrestling. And people stopped even knowing NWA, WCW,
Right.
you know? So it's interesting. 94 is really the year it shifts, because this is the year that you see WWF going towards the young guys. You see Shawn Michaels finally getting his start as a really definitive main event level guy. Of course, the famous ladder match at WrestleMania 10, which, I mean, you know, that match, I have a hard time believing that match will ever stop holding up. I think the psychology was so good, and I think that, you know, Hall and Michaels were just so on that night. It's so weird, and I've watched it a lot, and every little part of that match works perfectly. You
Sure.
know, even when you can tell they don't mean to do something, it works. Like, I remember there was an exact spot where Hall catapults Michaels into the ladder, and, you know, Michaels takes the bump and he's selling, and the ladder falls on him. And here's working. Most guys today, and I've seen it a million times, I've seen, 'cause since there's been a dozen trillion fucking ladder matches, every time I've ever seen this where the ladder falls on them after a bump, they no sell it. Michaels, on the other hand, just like crumples. He
Yeah.
takes the ladder, hits him, he registers, and he just like, oh, like just crumples. And it just made you go, my God, like this is so violent.
Yeah.
Like, he literally can't get away. Like, the ladder is just haunting him almost. It was just amazing. And unfortunately, it really was at the end the highlight of Hall's career. I definitely would say he never got any bigger than that.
Oh, yeah.
You can argue NWO, and yeah, he made more money, absolutely, but in terms of a guy where people, I mean, I remember being a kid and being like, you know, I was 5, 6 years old, but I still remember being like, he's gonna be the guy. Like, he's him and Brett. Like,
Yeah.
and they'd done it in '93 a little bit, but Hall was still not established yet. But he was over as shit. Like, people don't understand. That Razor Ramon run was very, very good for him. I mean, he was on top of the world. I mean,
Yeah.
he was number two for a good year, behind whoever was the champ. So, and of Michaels, of course, we all know how that story goes. So with WWE, it was interesting. There's a lineage, where WWF starts going to the young guys, then you see WCW taking these old WWF guys. They take Hogan in June, and holy fuck, has there ever been a bigger announcement from a wrestling company? We took the other guy's banner guy. I mean,
Yeah.
it would literally be the exact same thing if John Cena went to TNA. That's how big, and it was even bigger than that because Hogan still was, I wouldn't say in his prime, but he was right at that tail end where it was sloping, but he still had a whole lot of momentum. And ironically enough, who was behind getting Hogan in WCW? Ric Flair, by the way. So that ends up being very eerie later on when Hogan completely just fucks Flair in terms of his fucking standing in the business. I mean, late 94 was just the Hogan jobbing Flair out show. That's really what it was. I mean, literally every month on pay-per-view, Flair taking the leg drop, losing. I mean, it's like, fuck.
Yeah.
But again, you can't argue with it though, in the sense that what are you gonna do? You make this huge, you invest so much money in Hogan being your next guy, and who do you put him with? Well, your guy. Who's your guy? Well, Flair. However, I think '94 really, unfortunately, was the year where I think Sting really needed to get pushed a lot harder than he did that year.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say 94 was the first indication, looking back, of wow, WCW really dropped the ball on this guy. Huge. I mean, I have no doubt if Sting would have been in WWF, and again, this is hypothetical, who knows, but with the talent level he had, I mean, this dude was healthy. The only significant injury he had had, even in his career, was in '90 when he really fucked up his knee. But at this point, his knee was healthy. He was healthy. He was having amazing matches with, I mean, everybody. He had a hell of a feud with Rick Rude that year, which, unfortunately, in a Sting match in Japan, Rude hurt his back, had to retire. But Rude, really, the first time ever in his career, gets a huge push pre-Hogan because really WCW didn't have that many
No,
guys.
and Rude was so talented.
Oh, yeah. And he was a perfect heel. I mean, he really was. And they put him, I mean, he was the quote-unquote international champion, which was the old WCW belt that Flair brought back after he came back, and WCW being geniuses. Although I kind of mark to it a little bit, though, having the two world titles, it's just they didn't really use it the way that, again, it was '94. No one had ever really thought this out. And it's not like with the limited talent pool, WCW could have done a brand thing, and they shouldn't have anyway. That's proven to even be a failure for WWE, really. I
Right.
mean, it's arguable, but I think it's pretty clear, especially in 2012, that it is not working 10 years later.
Right.
And they're not wanting it to work, clearly. So that was cool, and they ended up having a unification. But we'll get to that later. But definitely the Rude thing, like you said, he was so talented, and it made you really go, why in the fuck did he not ever have a run with Hogan? I mean, he was clearly a better worker than most of the guys that had runs with Hogan. I mean,
Oh, for
is anyone
sure.
going to dispute Rude's a better worker than Earthquake, for instance, or fucking Zeus from 89. I mean, come on. But if you look at it, Rude was the guy that really groomed Ultimate Warrior. He's absolutely the guy.
Sure.
Because Rude was the guy that worked with Warrior both before he got that WWF title run and after he had the cage match at SummerSlam that is very good, as good as an Ultimate Warrior match could be, which is bad, but still. So I think that Rude, and I would say kudos to WCW because they finally went, okay, let's give Rude a run. Because, I mean, fuck, who else do we have? Plus, he can work. He looks like $1 million.
Oh, gosh.
He looks like an asshole as well. And really, he kept Sting alive early on in 94. Because had Rude not been there
Sting wouldn't have
with,
had
at the
anything.
No, because all he could have done was work with Flair again. And at that point, it had already been done so
Then you're
much.
going to start beating it to death to where the people won't tune
Right.
in to watch it.
Right. And I can't even remember who Sting worked with up until that. I think it was Vader again. And again, that's the same thing where, what are you going to do? But and when Rude gets injured, they had. Flair or Vader and Sting had a not a unification, but a title match. And Slamboree, by the way, 94. Very good fucking match, and Sting becomes the international champ. It has a good little run with it, and that sets up for the ultimate unification between Sting and Flair. And I think it was a big mistake having Flair beat him because you have this guy that a year before you're teasing is going to be retired. And I understand why they did it because two things. Flair clearly, I mean, I'm sure was the deal to get Hogan in was I want to work with Hogan when he first gets here, which he did,
Sure.
and it worked. And definitely, you can argue much bigger draw. And I wouldn't deny that necessarily at all. I mean, clearly, because if you recall, WWF attempted to do Flair Hogan and it failed.
Yeah.
They did it in little house shows, and for some odd reason, WWF just didn't like it. It was just kind of a clash of styles. And if you ever watch a Hogan Flair match, it is kind of awkward because it is. It's a much different. Both guys are so different, and it's just like, ugh, you know?
Yeah, they didn't know how to produce it.
No, and they didn't know. Okay, Flair's a great bumper, probably the best ever. I would say he's up there at least. And so, really, all they end up being is Flair bumping around for Hogan, which is fine, but you're not getting the heat I think that you really need to make Hogan as big as he should have
Right.
been. And my line of thinking when thinking about this is they could have done really a thing for 94 that was cutting edge, which would have been babyface versus babyface, Sting versus Hogan.
Yeah.
And it could have been, if they would have worked it the way that it could have been worked, it could have been huge. I mean, it could have been one of those things where like it could have given WCW a little mini pop, perhaps. Who knows? Because again, it would have been way different than what WWF was doing. Because if you remember, they kind of teased Brett Luger kind of not liking each other. They were baby faces, but it had kind of been steaming because when Luger was heel, he did the whole thing where he fucked Brett up and like that whole thing mid to late 93 where they kind of teased a little bit. My opinion is so that the Rumble thing made a little more sense.
Sure.
But regardless, WWF clearly in 94 and I mean all the way to 97 on was formulaic as shit. And today it's like that again. They're trying to attempt this Rock Cena thing, but it just is not working in my view. But no, they were clearly wanting to do Brett versus so and so, and Brett versus a clear heel, and it ended up being Backlund. Jeez. But again, it's the same situation as WCW at that time, and I don't think people realize the extent of the depression the wrestling business was in at this time. There was literally nothing in terms of mainstream exposure aside from really Hogan doing Thunder in Paradise. That's the only crossover thing that was going on in the early 90s, and even that was a pretty big failure ultimately. So wrestling went from being literally the biggest thing in entertainment in the mid to late 80s to being a forgotten thing. And so, you had these strange things happening. And I mean, both WCW, WWF were grasping for straws so terribly, which is evident by WCW signing Hogan. I mean, literally, that was really a last resort for them. Because they had done everything. It was really the beginning of like guys staying in a company longer than a year or two. You started to see this in the early 90s, like big time. Whereas before, with the territories, you could go from place to place. At this point, there were no territories. You either worked for WWF or WCW, or you were an indie guy. It's just the way it was. And by the way, 94 was really the beginning of the ECW phenomenon as well. 94 was the year that Shane Douglas made the famous deal. He won the NWA title and he said, "Fuck this.
Yeah.
I don't want your belt." That had never, nothing like that had ever happened ever. It was huge.
Sure.
As much as the NWA belt didn't mean anything then, and it really didn't, it meant maybe a little more than it does today, but not by much. It really was not a big deal. And for ECW, this little, I mean, really a mom and pop promotion, especially in 94, I mean, fuck.
Fresh off the
To
oven.
go, oh, yeah. To go, "We don't really want you anymore. We're going to do our own thing." And it really began what, I mean, as much as you want to say about ECW, it did change the business. It really
Without a
did.
question.
Oh, my
And
God. And especially.
introduced new styles, it introduced new workers, it gave other
Yeah.
people a chance. It was a different culture of wrestling as opposed to what WCW and WWF was providing.
Yeah. Oh, well, and let's look at all the guys who started in America for in ECW. Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Jericho, Lance Storm. Let me think here. Rey Mysterio, Psychosis. Fuck, I'm trying to think of Japan. Japan. Early 90s. Really not too many guys from Japan. Although a strange fact for any pure wrestling fans, but in the NWA World Title tournament, Osamu Nishimura was in the tournament. Who, if you know anything about All Japan or anything about Japanese
Or if
wrestling
you're
in the
like me and
last
you
decade.
don't.
Well, basically, Osamu Nishimura is like a very big star. I mean, he in the especially early 2000s, he was a very big star. So that was just a random fact, but yeah, I mean, so at this point, ECW was a very niche, whatever thing. And so WCW and WWF really didn't have much to work with in terms of new talent to sign. And it wasn't a business like it is now where it's open. There was no predominant internet at that time. It was very, very young. And I mean, virtually, I mean, literally, pretty well, nobody had it. So it's not like you can learn about a guy in Japan
Sure.
or whatever unless you're going there. So, you had to use the same guys, and if you weren't from WWF, you most likely didn't get a job in WCW unless you were from USWA or some, little well-known indie. You just didn't get a job. So that's why you saw the repetition of things and why a lot of things didn't work, I think. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, as WWF, as I've said, geared for the future, and they took a shit ton of losses, especially in 95. After 94, I mean, WWF was like leaning on the ropes. They were almost done. I mean, it's been documented. They lost more money in 95, which would kind of trickle into 94, or at least the late 94 would be counted, than they ever have ever. You know, I mean, it was bad. And another promotion, and in my view, I think definitely a lot of people that I've heard talk about it that are a lot more educated in wrestling than I, Smoky Mountain Wrestling, 94 was really a big year for them as well.
Yeah.
You know, Jim Cornette basically said, fuck you, WCW, and was doing his thing. But again, they as well were really not doing too well. So Smoky Mountain guys were getting in WWF predominantly at that point, since Cornette really did not fucking like WCW. Still doesn't. Even though they're dead, he still rants about them.
Yeah.
Kind of like what I'm doing now.
Sure.
So really, if you weren't part of that clique of that sort of SMW sort of thing, you were fucked. So it was very hard in 94 to get a job if you didn't have one, and it was hard to keep one too, because everyone at that point was wanting to blame the other guy for why the business was in the shitter instead of the quality of product that they were putting on. Now, with that said, I think some of the better work, I would say work-related wrestling in terms of actual working, some of the best stuff I've seen was from 94.
Sure.
I mean, not just in the ladder match wasn't as much of, you know, it wasn't a wrestling match, but work-wise, incredibly good. And WCW had awesome wrestling. By the way, 94 was the last full year that a certain someone spent in WCW, a guy named Steve Austin.
Who went on to WCW, or I'm sorry, ECW, and really kind of gave birth to the character that he used, you know, well, today, and, you know, what made him famous.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's that is number one biggest misuse of talent. It has to be ever in the business.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if Eric Bischoff would have just simply went, you know, maybe not do the beer thing, but go out there and just beat the shit out of everybody. Don't care. Don't be a heel or a babyface. Just be you. Who knows where WCW
would
be.
I think that WCW, though, the culture of it was so different that they were in yeah. such a different atmosphere that I don't really think they took the time to get to know some of the people. I mean, aside from the main eventers and, you know, the guys that they had to communicate with, you know, like Hogan, mm-hmm. Flair, and Savage, and, you know, your bigger names that they had to communicate on a daily basis with, they knew them, but even they had their own little gimmick, you know.
Yeah. Well, and you got to think, too, WCW had one big advantage and also one big disadvantage that WWF did not have at that time, and that was they were part of a corporation.
Sure.
You know, they were part of Turner Broadcasting.
And that was pretty much, you know, the flavor of their environment, too. I mean, that's mm-hmm. they operated as a corporation. You know, they thought as a corporation. Everything about them just screamed corporation. They had money backing, which led them to get people. But in the same sense, mm-hmm. you couldn't get a personal, intimate look into somebody's life like you could in a WWF or an ECW or, you know. So I think that kind of had an effect on it as well.
Well, and let's just be real honest. I mean, aside from Dusty and I don't know who all was part of WCW that was any kind of creative really at that time, aside from a few guys – there weren't any wrestling-minded people that were even going to begin to think like that
right.
anyway. It was, you know, especially the Bischoff mode of doing things back then, especially, was, well, we've got this idea, and you kind of look like the idea I have for the idea, so here, just be this person
right.
that you may not be.
Do this.
Yeah. Now, granted, they did luck out and get some gems out of it. You know, speaking of Austin, the Hollywood Blondes came exactly from something like that,
yeah.
where Austin was guaranteed to get a U.S. title run. He was going to be managed by Harley Race, and all of a sudden, one day, he just shows up, and they're like, and Pillman was the one. They didn't even tell him. Pillman's the one that came out to him and like, dude, we're a tag. And Austin was pissed. It ends up being really, I mean, in my view, one of the best tag teams ever. I mean, those do they worked so well together.
Yeah.
And I think when the book's written about pro wrestling, I know everyone says that, like, you know, someday the business will never be around, so we'll have to write a big book.
I don't know about that.
On how the business was. Well, of course not. The business has been around since really the beginning of time, if you really want to get technical. Pillman and Austin are two of the most influential guys ever in the business because Austin, clearly, but Pillman was the first guy to do something out of the ordinary. He did the loose cannon thing, and I mean legitimately worked practically everyone in the business. I mean, no one, I mean, literally to this day, people think he's nuts. You know what I mean? And who knows? Was it a work? That's the beauty
of
it.
I'll say this. When I was watching wrestling as a fan, and I saw Pillman, and he was doing a little, just a little miniature thing. It was with when he was with the Hart Foundation with Austin, and they were feuding with Austin, and he did something that skit. Oh, which one was it? The one where that one too. That and combined with the one where they did the one in his house.
Oh yeah.
Where Austin invaded his house and he supposedly had a gun, like. That scared the shit out of me, like, as a shoot.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, holy fuck, why is this on TV? Like, holy hell, I wasn't supposed to see that. Like, you know, that it felt so real. And I think that's another thing that came later on that wasn't in 94. But in ECW, a lot of that kind of stuff, you know, they kind of had a touch of reality. And I know that sounds far-fetched because with all the hardcore matches and stuff, it's like, how is that possibly believable at all? But, I mean, the angles and the emotion and the little nuances, those things had real elements to them. And that was kind of what kicked off in 96 and 97, 98, the whole reality-based entertainment TV that we saw.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but I mean, same with the Pillman Austin thing. I was scared to death. I literally thought Pillman was going to kill
him. Oh, yeah.
Him. I was like, whoa, we're not supposed to see
this.
Yeah,
and when it cut off, holy shit.
Right. And people are going to go watch this now and probably go, oh, fucking, but you got to think about the times. Nothing like that had ever, ever even close to happened on a mainstream scale.
And granted, this wasn't 94. That angle did not happen. I think that was like 96 or 97,
yeah,
but.
Probably was mid 96 or something.
I don't know. But I mean,
still,
you know, that was just a short time after, but I mean, really, they kind of got the ball rolling on that kind of stuff in 94.
Oh yeah. Especially with ECW. I mean, they really began in by the way, 94 in ECW was, when Cactus Jack ended up going to ECW. And I mean, he had some of the best promos ever in the business in ECW. And there's another guy also from WCW that just did not get utilized the way he should have. I think 94, now that I think about it, especially now bringing all this up, you know, 94 was the year when they had all the pieces to the puzzle that they needed. They just had no idea how to put them
together. Right, they were scattered about.
They had no clue. And it's so amazing because, again, hindsight's 20/20. And really, honestly, there were very few people that really in 94 would have told you Austin's a main event guy. And those guys that would have told you that were people that knew him.
Sure.
And worked with him, you know. So it's not really like you should go, well, fuck you, Eric Bischoff, because you didn't see this. Although we should say fuck you, Eric Bischoff, for a lot more than just that. Especially with the Foley stuff. I mean, he had some really good promos when he worked with Vader. So it's weird. They kind of did something with him, but they just never got it. I mean, he wasn't allowed, and nobody in that environment was allowed to be
themselves.
Them and allowed to go, okay, listen, this is what we want, and just do you. It was contrived. It was line-by-line shit. And really, I think people give WWE the, you know, well, they're the ones that created the scripts. I would say WCW because, again, you got to think 92, 93 was when they did the horrible, like, mini movies.
Oh, God.
Of, like, Vader and Sid, like, going to some island and fucking with Sting. It was just horrible. WCW wanted – they looked at wrestling like a movie. And it's kind of like that famous quote now from Beyond the Mat where Vince said, "We make movies."
Sure.
Well, really, WCW started that mindset. WWF was definitely gaga entertainment, blah, blah, blah. But for 94, they were the wrestling company,
right?
Surprisingly. They were the ones putting on the better matches. As well, in average. I mean, definitely WCW had really good matches in 94, but I mean, if you think about, and even the Bret Hart, Bob Backlund shit, they had good matches for strict technical wrestling at that time. Backlund was just outdated.
Sure.
And I think that that's the problem. But I don't know why exactly they took the belt off Bret and put it on Backlund. Because Backlund was not champion long until your boy beat him for the belt.
Well, I was waiting on that.
But here's the thing people need to understand. Andy is as obsessed with Kevin Nash as anyone I've ever met in my life. Literally. I've never met anyone that is as big of a mark for Nash.
And I don't know why either. You know, I had absolutely no interest in him whatsoever through the 90s, through 2000, and it wasn't till about probably 3 or 4 years ago where I started really, really, for whatever reason, just out of nowhere, watching his, you know, watching some of his stuff and just freaking out about some of the shit he was doing. And it's like, oh my God, this is amazing. And I guess I just took it overboard and yeah. Like, I think when he came back and actually stayed and was actually involved in the angles, while everybody else was groaning, oh God, you know, it's the whole Nash and Triple H buddy, you know, click power trip thing again. Oh, they're gonna fuck everything up. Oh, he's too old. Like, I think I was like the only person who was like, ah, this is a good idea. Like, I like this.
Yeah, you were literally the only person. And this is horrible, especially in the internet age. You literally were the only person I've ever seen say that was a good idea. I'm pretty sure if you fucking interviewed Triple H right now, he would say it was a bad idea. All right, that's. And here I will give Nash credit. The TLC match that they had, or well, the match at TLC, the pseudo ladder match that really wasn't a ladder,
sure,
whatever the fuck it was. Despite horrible writing, because the match idea was terrible.
Well, I knew as soon as they made it a ladder match with Kevin Nash, that was trouble.
Well, it's not even a ladder match. A ladder match where a sledgehammer, you can get it and use it to win by pinfall. So really, it's just a match, but the ladder match stip is only so that you can get a weapon. Which I will say this: they did put the sledgehammer over, or at least attempt. I mean, it was so obviously scripted and horrible looking, but that's WWE just in general. It's not really their fault. I mean, you can see with Nash, like, he just doesn't do well with scripts. And he fucked up a little bit of the promo because he wants to just talk.
Right.
And he's one of those last guys in the business that they really honestly should have just realized that Nash is not a bad promo.
No.
Let him just go out there and talk.
Okay.
If you're going to do it for Jericho, let him do it for fucking Nash. But anyway, the match at TLC was much better than I expected. I did enjoy it. It was good. Aside from Nash getting injured again. But I think nobody's shocked by that either. And I feel, honestly, I used to, like, despise him for this. Like, what the fuck's wrong with you? Are you made of glass? But now he's so old, you feel bad,
sure,
you know? I mean, I really do. I'm like, fuck, man. Like, and it couldn't possibly be for the money.
No, good God, no.
I think, honestly, he just, I really think the man, and I know we're getting off topic, but whatever, fuck it. I honestly think, now that I think about it, the plan was Nash probably came to Hunter and said, "Hey, man, I'm wanting to finally just be done with the business." And so they made this angle to give Nash at least a payday for it, which, you know what, I commend him for. And he definitely deserves it. And as much as people give him shit, since the Hall of Fame is so over and everybody's it, definitely, if you're going to have a Hall of Fame, put Nash in it.
Got to.
I mean, the dude's more than qualified.
Got to.
This, even without the WCW shit that happened, if you want to fucking blame him for anything in WCW, which I say you shouldn't, because it's like, the fuck did he, you know what I mean? Like, yes, he booked a little of it, but it's like he didn't book near enough to fucking ruin the company.
Oh, no.
It was so fucked before he ever had anything to do with it creatively. Even if he would have never went to WCW, just what he did in WWF, I mean, the dude was champion for literally a year.
Yeah.
Yes, he's the lowest drawing WWF champion
ever. But look
ever.
At the year.
Yes. That's my point. I don't think anybody could have done better. Maybe Michaels, but I still say Michaels really... That was a weird time.
Sure.
94, 95, because it was the year they knew Michaels was the next guy. They knew it. And it was a weird moment because Brett was still there, and they wanted Brett to clearly be the guy, but they also could see that Michaels was fucking ready. So they wanted him to stay over, but they also didn't want to throw the belt on him yet because they wanted to establish someone to be a bigger deal, and so at the end of the day, he becomes a bigger deal because of that. I really do think that they meant it for it to be Nash, but Nash just – bad timing, honestly.
Sure.
And I think that – I definitely believe that WrestleMania 11 was probably planned to be the time Michaels won the strap. But for whatever reason I can't think of, they somehow thought Nash needed to keep it longer, which, you know me, I'm a big mark for long title runs. Even
yeah.
if it's not working, you need to at least put legitimacy in the belt. Don't just throw it on a guy after 2 weeks. And Nash tried, man. I mean, what are you going to do with Mabel, okay? Like, let's remember who he worked with, too. It's not like he
I liked Mabel.
I mean, fuck. And this is 95, so whatever, but still. Fuck.
I have poor taste. I'm sorry. Nobody likes my taste. Nobody likes my taste in music. Nobody likes my taste in movies. Nobody likes any of my taste.
Andy is a weird guy. Because, see, usually if someone has the interests of Andy, and this is no offense because I'm about to put
None
you
taken.
Over, you'd think they're fucking retarded.
Yeah.
Because he has a very fucked up view of pretty much everything. But Andy's not dumb. Far from it. Andy's actually very smart. He's one of the few smart people I ever speak
Thank you.
To. So, and especially with Red, although we all know the dumbest opinion ever in wrestling mark history is Jamie Fierick's famed, I like Khali being
the champ.
Oh my
champ. God.
Literally, he said this, and Jamie, by the way, if you're listening to this, don't try to deny it, because we all know you said this. But here's the thing about Jamie. He will fucking defend his point, even if he's clearly wrong, until he dies. It got over. That's what he'll say. It got over. He got Batista over later. Oh, fuck. But anyway, we're digressing. But so anyway, no, I think 94, it was like a weird, bizarre world where WCW became what WWF was when it was over, but it was so outdated that it just really did not work. Whereas WWF saw the light at the end of the tunnel in like 3 years when they were going to finally start getting over with this young mindset to their business, but it just, you know, they had to get out of that slump. And really, honestly, 94 was just everyone spinning their wheels at the end of the day. It really was. It was, and really, ECW was the only company that I can think of that was gaining momentum at all. I mean, they really lucked out. They were the only company that really ever – I wouldn't say they made money in 94. I would imagine they probably didn't. But they gained more prestige, more notoriety in 94. You finally started – Now, again, I want to be clear, I had no fucking idea about ECW till 96, but in retrospect, when you look at, you know, old mags and things of this nature, you see more references to ECW.
Yeah.
So it's clear people were finally at the first time, really, that people started to take notice of what ECW was doing. And then in 95 was really when they just fucking got very, very influential, very good. That's when Raven came in and all that shit. So like 94, I think, if I look at it, especially in a booking sense, I think Paul E. Heyman, I know, if you're listening to this podcast and you don't know who Paul Heyman is, you're a fucking idiot and you should just turn it off now. But before you turn it off, just know that simply, just without going into the past 20 years of the wrestling business, he was the basically the writer for ECW. If you could even call it that, he wasn't a booker. Booker's a better term. He didn't write anything, really. He just put together scenarios, so guys, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I think he saw that, like, okay, this is where we need to go. And 94, it started getting a little more violent, a little bit. Definitely a lot more violent, but Shane Douglas was the guy. And Shane Douglas really was never a hardcore guy. And the rationale was actually quite genius. Even though the madness in ECW happens, we still have Shane Douglas. And he's the franchise, and he can go an hour with anybody, and he can work. And I thought, I mean, I really attribute that to really the early success of ECW, because if they would have had Sandman as the champ when they started gaining notoriety, I don't think it would have been as effective, because Heyman was smart and knew the main event needs to have wrestling. It needs to. It can have violence and bullshit, but at the end of the day, it needs to be a good wrestling match too. Number one. And Shane Douglas, as much as you want to criticize the guy, and yes, he did lose ability along the way, and you can attribute it to whatever, he could fucking go in the early 90s. The dude is very fucking good. And he was the perfect makeup of the top guy that ECW needed. And this is in a climate where in WCW, Hogan's jobbing everyone that even had an inkling of overness. And people were literally booing him out of the building.
Sure.
Because these people, you know, again, and I think this is also something that people need to understand that maybe weren't around and don't really understand how the business used to be. It was still, for a large extent, regionalized. WCW fans were not necessarily WWF fans at all. So there actually were, surprisingly, WCW fans that maybe knew Hogan but didn't look at him like he's, oh my God.
The man.
They were Flair. Yeah. Flair was their guy. He'd been around most of the time. Sans, what, 2 years that he was in WWF? Not even? I mean, so he was the guy for NWA, WCW forever. I mean, this is, especially in 94, there were people that literally only remembered Flair as the top guy. So it's like you bring in a guy that clearly cannot work like everyone else you've ever seen. He's limited. He looks much different. And it's the thing where, you know, difference isn't necessarily what gets you over. You have to have something about you that appeals to your audience. And when you take a guy that's fucking clearly over tan, he's bleached blonde, he's billed from California, he's this pretty boy looking guy. I know that's amazing to say about Hogan, but it is what it is. And he's sitting there and he's just so white meat baby face, it hurts you. That's not what the South liked. Trust me, I'm from it. I know. You know. Flair was a rugged guy, yes, bleach blonde, but the fucking guy could work. And he could pour it on and be violent when he needed to be. And he had extravaganzas. He had fucking hour-long matches with Steamboat that are still considered classics just 5 years before that. And now you're bringing in Hogan, who, you know, really all he's got is a big boot and a leg drop, and you're trying to say this guy's better. That's a stretch, and especially at a time where you're saying that, I mean, wrestling had already been out for 5 years, so everyone knew it was predetermined, so it just was not working, and really, it didn't really ever work, and that's why they fucking turned him in 96. Yep. And it's really amazing that some really serious shit did not happen until then. They were lucky. They had a really good heel invader that ended up working with Hogan and doing well. The matches are not fucking good, by the way. Don't think you're going to go watch them and be amazed. No, Vader cannot carry Hogan. Trust me, I've seen the attempts, and it's fucking ugly. But what Vader did was give a perfect nemesis for Hogan so that Hogan looked better. And he at least looked like what a babyface should look like. He looked like someone trying to prevail over evil. Aside from, you know, him going over going against a guy that's clearly more skilled than him. And with Flair, he's always been great about, like, or was. You know, he'll put you over, but he'll put you over so much that everyone knows, well, Flair's really the best
Right.
guy here. And really, I think Flair took a lot of shit out of Hogan. I mean, come on. Late 94 especially, where he was like, okay, I got a job to you all the time. I'll get myself over, though, too. And it hurt Hogan tremendously. And late 94 was when we see Savage come into the picture. And which really helped Flair, because it finally gives him a babyface that can work his ass off. And they really just started where they fell off in 92 and had fucking really good matches. I mean, you know, you can say whatever you want. They still hold up. Not all of them, but some of them really still do hold up from that WCW early run from Savage. But the Sting thing, you see in 94, Sting fall off a little bit. You start to see him in a more upper mid card to even mid card, just straight up status, when at one time he was the top babyface of WCW. There's no doubt about it. And really was the even in 93. It's really kind of tragic to look at 94 because of what could have been, you know. So much talent wasted. And yeah, I mean, 94 was the train, and just like 99, it was a big transition year. It was really a signal of things to come, and not in a good way, because the business just got really, really bad after that, and really zenithed in 95. I mean, it just the worst year I would say ever in the wrestling business would be 95. Both in terms of revenue and also just the quality of the products were just not good. I mean, they just weren't. And that's not really necessarily a knock on the talent. It's just they didn't have a lot to work with. We will turn this into, I guess I'll ask the question. I know you really weren't necessarily in the thick of it, so to speak, in 94. You really weren't a full-time
Right.
watcher of the product, but I know you've seen some shit on DVD and such. What thing in 94 would you say was really a pinnacle moment in 94? And I already know what it is, but I want you to say
No, I'm not going to say the Nash title run.
Okay.
Despite popular belief. No, I would say
Yeah.
probably the ladder match with Hall and Michaels. That to me, it signified that, look, despite what, happened to Hall and, his troubles and, how he later became to, only be just a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of himself. That to me signified, okay, look, we're starting to turn to these guys and this, this is our future, because they predeceased everybody else as far as doing the ladder match, first of all. Which it, introduced a new kind of style, and wouldn't even later become even remotely as popular until the 2000s. And even today, we still have a fucking pay-per-view called TLC where there's tables, ladders, and chairs. So it introduced a more hardcore of a style, in a business and in a company that had promoted pretty much soul entertainment and soul traditionalist wrestling. Along with WCW as well, and even WCW didn't get on the boat until in the late 90s and then early 2000s as well before they started that kind of style of wrestling. But to me, I mean, when the Hardy Boys and the Dudley Boys and Edge and Christian were killing it, you have to look to this match first. And not to mention, you got two of the premier workers of the time in Michaels and Hall going against each other, killing each other, working with each other night in and night out. And I mean, that really kind of, they were working kind of a traditionalist thing where, they're working with each other every night and they've got a program and they have a certain kind of match they want to produce for the audience. And but in the same sense, they were doing it in a new style and with, you know, new moves and with a new stipulation, the ladder match. And but that to me shows that that to me is kind of the pinnacle defining moment. And it was also a barometer for what was going to come in the future.
Yeah. I definitely think in terms of influence, that match is absolutely the top moment of 94. And I mean, 94 did not have a whole lot of banner moments just overall. I would definitely say that is the most influential, but I think the biggest thing about 94 to me is, I mean, it has to be Hogan signing to WCW only because, it really, in the, at the end of the day, it did shift the power from WWF being the top dog, to WCW, not sure. Immediately, but I mean, in the next 2 years, especially the famous Bash at the Beach where he turned heel. I mean, had he not, clearly, if he had not signed in 94, that would have not been possible. And of course now the famous rumor, well, I think Nash is all pretty much confirmed that originally Sting was going to turn that year. And it just would not have been as effective. I don't think Sting's near the heel Hogan ended up being. Well, I know he's not near the heel. Also, I think that the slow rise of ECW has to be up there too. That's my tie. I would say that's one and two because eventually ECW becomes, whether you are a hater of ECW, and there are a lot of them out there that claim, oh, it's not as big of a deal. Well, you can't deny the late 90s was nothing more than ECW rehashing from typically 95, 96. So just immediately after 94 was really when ECW becomes the I hate this term, but pretty much it was the quote-unquote smart marks wrestling company. Because with ECW in 94, they really began the, we're not going to beat you with the stupid gimmicks and shit. We're going to present our guys as legit guys. And you saw, you know, in the end of 94, I think it was last week in 94, Raven comes into ECW. And I mean, that gimmick alone changed a lot about wrestling. I think Raven, honestly, I mean, there were some guys before him that were also doing that realistic sort of gimmick, but nothing like him. He, man, unfortunately, Raven became another guy that lived his gimmick and nearly died. Thankfully, he's not that way. But if you've even heard some of the recent Raven stuff, it is actually quite tragic because you can tell he's starting to lose his mind a little bit, unfortunately. Which I don't know if that's drugs as much as concussions, because I mean that dude had some violent matches. But no, I definitely think that that is a huge part. And the thing about ECW, more than just the style, was the opportunity that it gave guys that ended up being really the top guys in the business, and some of them being really some of the greatest workers of all time. I think Eddie Guerrero. I mean, without ECW, I don't think that WCW would have signed him. Had they had, it would have been a lot later, and who knows how that would have went. Dean Malenko, too, and yes, Chris Benoit. Rey Mysterio as well. So I think that that's definitely a big moment, but I definitely think the Hogan signing WCW Zenith's that. Now, we're going to shift to the shittiest moment of 1994. This is a lot to work with here, so.
I suppose.
You know.
I don't know, because you know what? I would probably say. I don't know, because part of me wants. I don't know. Do you have one picked out?
Fuck. I've got a lot, so. Not necessarily. I'm trying to think if I can narrow it down to one exact thing, and I really don't know. There was so much shit of 1994. It'd probably have to be the misuse of Austin. I mean, ultimately, that became really huge blow to WCW overall. Because if you think about it, had Austin still been part of WCW by the time NWO really hit its stride, I mean, who knows how the Monday Night Wars would have went? I mean, honestly, I mean, yes, he wouldn't have been Stone Cold. Yes, he wouldn't have been able to do the middle finger shit. But I mean, the dude's so talented. I honestly believe I know for a fact he didn't
Right.
need that all. All he needed was a little edge to him. And I mean, people don't really understand. 97, 98, WCW was all, like, no doubt the biggest wrestling company in the world by, like, leaps and
Yeah.
bounds, the top. And had Austin been part of that equation, regardless if he would have been part of NWO, he probably would have been, because we know Nash and him were fairly good friends. I've heard that him and Hall didn't get along necessarily, and him and Hogan didn't get
Right.
along necessarily. But again, business is business. Who knows how that would have went? And had they done it the way that it, in my view, should have been done, where Austin was the baby face to their heel, we'd probably be watching
Yeah.
WCW every week. Honestly, I mean, he's the game changer in my view, as well as Foley. I mean, imagine if they would have both been there. So I definitely say that I'll put it under not just Austin, but the misuse of talent. I think that's definitely the worst moment now, or worst thing of 94. Now, worst moment of 94? Fuck. Again, there's so fucking much. I would say Hacksaw Jim Duggan beating Steve Austin for the U.S. title at
That's
Starrcade
fair.
94. Because it just made no sense. Not just because it's Austin, but because what in the fuck? No. On that same card, the main event was Hogan versus Beefcake, aka The
Oh
Butcher.
my
That was the worst moment
God.
of 94. Yeah, that was definitely the worst moment of 94. So actually, let's just say Starrcade 94 overall was the shithole of
Okay.
90 of 94. That fucking
That
card was
would
horrible.
work. I'm gonna say this and I'm gonna get a lot of wuh, but I would have to say it, and they had to do it, but I would have to say WCW signing of Hogan. And I say that because if, I mean, they had a parade for this fucker. I mean, he was the godsend. I mean, here is the guy who has come from WWF and carried the torch and paved the way for them and their success, and now he's coming into your company in WCW, and really, like, when he first started out, like, a lot of his pre-NWO shit, like, I mean, his initial debut got a pretty big pop and a pretty big ovation, and and was met with a lot of enthusiasm, and he had a he you know he had a good little run. I can't believe I just said that with Hogan. I mean, he had a good decent little run, but to me it was so underwhelming to what was kind of expected and really what probably should have been. I mean, instead of bringing in Hulk Hogan as Hulk Hogan, and maybe initially, I think they waited too long to make that change to the badass Hogan, to that. That rat, that skunk Hogan, that fucker who would just, he had the strap, and you had a legitimate contender, whether it be Luger or Sting or Flair or anybody, you had a legitimate contender, and just when you thought he was about to square off with him and man up, it wouldn't be till the pay-per-view where he would actually put his money where his mouth was, but he was just a chicken shit, and when they morphed that character into what it became, that's kind of when it took off. And to me, sure, you initially bring him in as the red and yellow and the uber baby face, but you transition him not long after that and give him something different, because it obviously wasn't working in WWF, which is why they let him go and they didn't pursue him, keeping him harder. Yeah, he wanted to be a movie star, and you could say that he was going to leave it regardless, but fuck, WCW, they came up with the funds, they made it work, they made it happen. They convinced him to basically come out of retirement and save their fucking company. And I think you should. I think I like I said. I just think that they took way too long to make that transition into a different form of a character. Now, granted, they made the right decision and that angle took off because of it. But really, if let's say they'd used Sting, would it have the same effect?
Yeah.
No. Well, I mean,
not even close.
Nobody knows. I mean, maybe he could. I mean, Sting's a hell of a worker. Sting could pull off a
well,
heel gimmick
just...
as well as anybody.
Here's the key. Yeah, but here's the key. He was not
he wasn't...
nearly as in, like, he was not as
right.
iconic.
That's a better
as
word, iconic.
Logan,
he, yeah, he,
point.
And he wasn't nearly as important or
yeah.
over at that point. He was over, and, you know, he was popular.
Mm-mm. Yeah, but again, you know, it kind of goes with the start in 94, especially late 94. They really hadn't done a whole lot with him over those 2 years, so
right.
He just kind of was there.
I just kind of
so,
felt
yeah.
bad because it's like they spent all this money to bring this guy in, Hogan, and they started putting him with the Giant in this shitty, shitty program. And oh, my God. And then there was Yeti.
Yeah.
You know, you know, I'll say the Yeti was probably the worst moment. If that, I would say that was,
yeah, but that wasn't even 94.
No, I mean,
but yeah,
I mean, that whole thing to me was really underwhelming. You bring him in, you work him for a couple months as the red and yellow, and then you need to shift him because it was obvious it wasn't working.
Yeah. And imagine if it would have been a Sting deal.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? But again, another thing we haven't talked about 94, and I can't believe, is Owen
yeah,
versus Bret.
The brother rivalry.
What a good feud, and what a simple feud. And tragic because, man, you could have totally put Owen in that Backlund situation.
Sure.
And the idea that they didn't really boggles my mind that I think about it now. Because here's a guy that is clearly a better worker. Clearly, I mean, he's modern, first off. And it would have been a lot more effective if he would have beat Bret for the belt. And, yeah, you could have done the same thing with Diesel beating him like a week or whatever later. I think it was actually closer to a month. I think it was like 3 weeks or whatever. But regardless... And you could have had a match and it not be 9 seconds. And you could have even done 9 seconds. But regardless, I mean, that just – I know it's becoming the Owen sob story on this podcast. But honestly, I mean, this is a dude that had every tool you could possibly need for a genuine, especially 90s era
yeah.
worker. Good on the mic, not great. I'm not saying he was the best promo of all time. But especially when Cornette ended up getting into the fold. I mean, man, him and Bulldog as a tag team was great. And just him in general. I mean, I don't get why he never got a run. I don't understand it. With all the guys that, you know, that'll be it. That's the number one thing then about 94, maybe. Aside from... I mean, I think definitely the misuse of talent in WCW trumps it. But now the more that I think about it, I definitely want to put the missed opportunity of Owen as top guy, even for just a second in 94, is a big blow to WWF, especially with that year that came and with, you know, 95 being so horrible. Just to think about just a little run with Owen, maybe just a month or two. And then the thing with that also is you give less pressure to Nash, and who knows, his run may have been a little
mm-hmm.
better. And, I mean, think about him and Owen having a run. Holy shit, the matches they could have had. And I don't know if they ever even really worked any kind of – I can only think of tag matches that Nash and Owen ever had. I don't even think they ever really had any real singles match. Maybe one or two that I can even think of. I don't think they ever really worked one-on-one against each other all that much. And, I mean, also the Owen-Brett cage match at SummerSlam is one of the best. I mean, I'm pretty sure that I looked at a couple of online polls one time, and I know online polls, but many people call it the best cage
mm-hmm.
match ever. And it's funny because it's not bloody. It's not necessarily super violent, but what it is a great wrestling match in a cage. And really, at the end of the day, that's all you need. They worked the cage well. It made sense. They teased. and just such a well done situation, and how that feud was. I mean, that feud was a 7 month feud, because Owen turns on Brett at the Royal Rumble tag team title match. You have Owen versus Brett at WrestleMania 10 to start the night off. Owen beats him. That's another thing people forget too. The same night Brett wins the WWF title, he jobs to his brother in the first match. Owen wins King of the Ring that year, and really becomes, for I would say a good 2 to 3 months, the top heel in the company, sans Yoko. But even with Yoko, he had really substantially decreased after losing to Brett, and only until they do the rehashed cage ma or cage casket match with Taker when Taker comes back at Survivor Series, he's still, I don't, he never gains the momentum he had before. Beautiful.
Sorry.
Whatever that was whatever it was. Motherfucker.
Apologize.
Well, and, but I definitely wanted to get that in because I had totally forgotten that, and I can't believe it. That good little push that Owen got that year that is puzzling that it didn't get to be more.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, we fucking wind down on this one, so we might as well just fuck. Any pod, I listen to podcasts a lot, by the way, and anyone, even the really, really like funny. Great ones. There's always that point in the show where you can just hear the people in it just, oh, yeah,
I
we've
think we're
talked
done.
about it. But yeah, we're definitely done. Tune in again next week. Don't know what year yet. We'll fucking have that ready. Until next time, we will see you.